Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a movie that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn from 2020. Yes, it has taken us a little while to get around to watching this movie, about half a decade. And now, having seen it...
I'm okay, having waited.
I was going to say, it was not only worth the wait, it was probably worth a longer wait.
I was leaning the same way, which maybe, I mean, normally we put at the end, is it worth watching?
No, it's not worth watching. I'm not the target audience for this.
Agreed, neither am I.
There are some people that will absolutely love this film. I am not one of them. I felt some of the action sequences early in the movie were well choreographed. They were very violent, enough so that it bothered me. But from did they do a good job doing what they did? Yes, I just didn't care for what they did. Second half of the movie, it's like that stunt coordinator was replaced or something, because now it was like, this just not only is still violent, it's just not well done.
There was one scene that I actually asked you while we were watching it. Is it just me, or is this not as fun as it should be? It should have been a fun fight scene.
There were some fight scenes near the beginning. I'm not going to say they got to the level of the hallway scene from the Daredevil Netflix show, but we're in that direction and approaching that sort of a thing. By the end, it felt like it was approaching the Batman 66 fight choreography.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been better off if they'd put the sound effects up there. Because it was slow. It was very clearly choreographed.
Part of it for me is because we were in a funhouse environment.
Yeah.
The funhouse wasn't doing what I expected it to do, if that makes sense. Like, we had the seesaw foam things, and one side would go down, but the other didn't pop up the way I thought it should.
I was expecting there would be a time or two where the kid would jump down on one and smack somebody upside the head or something like that.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the kid in just a sec. This movie was very bizarre to me in so much as there were parts of it where I was commenting to you, yeah, that's straight out of the comics, that's straight out of the comics, that's straight out of the comics. Clearly, some of the people involved were familiar with the comics, read the comics, and lifted whole hog in certain areas. Yet simultaneously, some of the same characters being used were so radically different than their comic book counterparts to be laughable.
I can see that. Well, okay, let's start very simple. When I think Birds of Prey, and maybe this is because I come from watching the TV shows, etc., but like, I think Oracle.
Oracle is the original Batgirl. Barbara Gordon founded the Birds of Prey. It does not exist without her. And she was nowhere to be found here.
Yeah. I was expecting the voice of Overwatch is what they called it in Arrowverse. To me, this is not a team movie.
Well, and also, though, going back to Smallville, they had the equivalent with Chloe, who was running it. It was everything but Barbara Gordon. But it was the same idea.
Well, and the TV show Birds of Prey from, was that the 90s?
No, it was 2000s, early 2000s.
Okay.
We should rewatch that just in light of this movie, what else they've done with the characters, and...
what else the cast of that has done.
I was going to say the cast.
But what I remember from that is the tower.
The clock tower.
In. Yeah.
That's an iconic part of the mythos. And it's a very Gotham-based premise and series. And here, it was in Gotham. There was no clock tower. There was no organizational thing. Most of the movie takes, well, from where we start the movie and where we end the movie, it was maybe a day. Now, granted, we flash back over that day about 8 times, which annoyed the hell out of me. But let's go back to the characters. Okay.
Yeah.
First off, it was called Birds of Prey with Harley Quinn. It was a Harley Quinn story that tangentially had Birds of Prey-ish things.
I think they should have reversed the title.
Absolutely. I don't know why they didn't. I think they should have just called it Harley Quinn.
I think they didn't want to. I think for a few reasons. First of all, Harley Quinn is not known as a hero. And second of all, they wanted the audience to know Birds of Prey was in there. Not that I feel they were.
I see putting Birds of Prey in the title, but outside of comics, Birds of Prey are just the normal sense of the term.
Yeah.
Hawks, other birds like that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the comic realm, unless you were reading at certain times when the main series was going, and the main Birds of Prey series, because it had some miniseries and stuff, but the main one lasted, I want to say 120 some odd, 150 issues. I mean, a long time. But outside of that, I mean, if you started reading after that, it's like, well, what is the Birds of Prey? Would be a fair question. So I don't think that having the title is a must-have, but if you're going to do a story of the Birds of Prey, you've got to have Oracle, like we mentioned. You've got to have Black Canary, which they kind of did. There are a few other characters that have been main members. Huntress made sense to pull in. Beyond that, you've got some wiggle room. It's a very female-centric premise, and they definitely did that here. But Harley Quinn has worked with them, but never been a member. Renee Montoya, I don't think, has ever been a member. And both Harley Quinn and Renee Montoya originated in the Batman animated series.
I think if you watched only this movie, you could come out with the impression, which I suspect is a misconception, that were it not for Harley Quinn, the Birds of Prey would have never come together as a team.
Yes, and that's totally not true in the comics. I am not even sure Harley Quinn had made it into DC Comics at the time the Birds of Prey had been around. Because Harley Quinn started with the animated series. Her first comic appearance was, I think, issue 13 of the Batman animated series-based comic. And then later she made it into the mainstream universe. But I think by that point, Birds of Prey had already been around, I want to say, a decade. Because I want to say the Birds of Prey started in the 1990s, but I'd have to go look it up. I don't remember for sure.
Okay.
But the Huntress character, which we had also seen in Arrow, very much taken from the comics, the original miniseries that created this version of the Huntress. And I've got to stress this version, because this is the post-crisis version. Pre-crisis, Huntress was on Earth 2, where the characters were kind of the original Golden Age versions, and she was the daughter of that Batman and Catwoman. Very much like how it was in the Birds of Prey TV series from the early 2000s. So I didn't have any real qualms with how they treated that character. The costume was hideous.
Especially at the end.
Oh, definitely at the end. It was horrible. And I didn't think that character, the main point of the character was to joke, oh, it's the crossbow killer. No, I'm the Huntress.
Yeah. And
that was about it.
That character was given too little material to work with. They felt they could bring the character in because they decided to use the Bertinelli diamond.
Mm-hmm.
If they hadn't used the Bertinelli diamond for the plot, then Huntress kind of made no sense.
Yeah, she was extraneous to it. They were taking the Huntress storyline of part of a mob family that got wiped out and she vows revenge and slamming it into this. Just as they had Harley Quinn's story, that they had almost enough of a notion for maybe sort of a kind of a movie. Okay, let's bolt the Huntress stuff into there. We need a little bit more. Well, we got to have a cop. Okay, let's go take the Renee Montoya character, which was a reasonably good version of the character from the animated series, the early era of the character in the comics, slam that storyline into there. Now we've got enough threads that we've almost got a core of a thing. Well, we got to round it out with something. Okay, let's toss a version of Black Canary there.
Make the high-pitched scream make sense occupationally.
That's even from the comics.
Okay.
But that's a later thing from the comics. The fact that it was a daughter of a previous Black Canary, that goes back to early 80s, I think, from the comics. Because Black Canary had originally been on Earth 2, but wound up being a member of the Justice League. And originally, it was the character had migrated Earths during one of the crossovers. Later, after those crossovers had been going for 20 years, it was revealed what really happened was they stopped in a pocket dimension. The child had been born, unbeknownst to everybody, couldn't control the power, and you get a kid screaming with that kind of a power, that's a problem. Put into a pocket dimension, aged, then the mother basically leaves Earth 2, the kid basically comes out having looked aged to the right point, looked just like the mother. Shenanigans. It made a little bit more sense in the crossover when they reveal it, but not much more.
Okay.
But they at least pulled that there. But she's a singer who happens to be able to fight and has no real backstory or explanation for how and why she can fight or why she does what she does.
Or why she works at the club of such a despicable person.
It's Gotham. You work where you can work, I guess.
Yeah.
But that despicable guy, Roman Cyanus of Black Mask, he had been in Gotham. I'm not a big fan of the character, the way they were using him here with what he did to some of the people that crossed him. I found completely disgusting.
Was he in Batgirl?
Batwoman.
Batwoman, sorry.
Yes.
Batwoman, sorry.
Yeah, I think he was. He's been used a few times, and there was a long stretch of comics where it's like, yeah, he existed, and he was used, but he wasn't kind of a mainstay Batman villain. He's gotten to be a little more of that over the more recent decades, but they had almost half a plot line for him to shoehorn into this.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to get enough threads where it almost makes sense. But the Cassandra Cain, the kid, she's a pickpocket here,
mm-hmm.
who steals the diamond and propels the whole story along. In the comics, she is the daughter of a Batman villain, and this Batman villain basically trains her from birth to fight, does not speak to the child. The only language this kid knows is body language, is fighting, all of that.
Interesting.
And in the DC Comics universe, she is in that upper echelon of fighters.
Not here.
She is about as far from that. She's like the Jimmy Olsen end of the spectrum, and a bad Jimmy Olsen at that.
Yeah.
So I was shocked why they even reused the name. I think there was half a dozen other names they could have and should have used. But if I were going to do a Harley Quinn film, I would not really have gone with the Birds of Prey. I would have gone the Gotham City Sirens route and team her up with Catwoman and Poison Ivy.
Mm. I mean, it seemed like it's not fair to call this a redemption arc, but it seemed like they wanted to show us she does bad things, but she doesn't have a purely bad heart.
They wavered on, is she crazy? Is she not?
Mm-hmm.
Is she on a redemption arc? Is she not? Is she a villain? Is she not? She's certainly not a hero.
Is she just desperate and confused and messed up?
Yeah. I did not come out of it particularly liking the character.
Mm-mm.
I didn't come out of it particularly liking Margot Robbie's portrayal of the character. But I blame that more on the material than anything else.
The material, and I'm not sure I've seen a version of that character I've particularly liked.
Have you ever seen the character from the Batman animated series?
No.
That's the definitive.
Okay.
And at some point, when we had lots of time, I do think it'd be worth going through the Batman animated series and the X-Men animated series from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of those shows were cultural touch points that made a lot of people Batman and X-Men fans.
Mm.
And with the Batman animated series, Paul Dini and Bruce Timm really got down to the heart of who these characters were. Cast brilliantly in some cases.
For the voices, yeah.
Kevin Conroy did just a beautiful job as Bruce Wayne, as Batman, balancing the two. They had a lot of big name people come in for various parts.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill was the Joker, etc. And created Harley Quinn, Renee Montoya, a couple other characters, some of which didn't really go anywhere, but others, they really fundamentally changed the characters, like Mr. Freeze.
Mm.
The version of him we got from that has become the version in the comics.
Oh, interesting.
Because the tragedy of his wife was dying, freezing her was the only way to save him. Things went wrong, and it's a tragic story.
Yeah, yeah. And a love story at that.
And a love story at that, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They really found some great ways to tell some of the stories, to reposition the characters a little bit in ways that very much worked. But I think what we got here was that character out of that context with the implied backstory. Everything from the hyenas and a few things were from there, but everything from the roller derby, the beaver, and stuff like that was all straight out of the comics.
We had payoff for the roller derby.
We did. So there were some things where it's like, okay, if you're going to do it, use it.
And I will say early on when Harley is drunk and making bad decisions, using her boot not that I quite understood how the boot was used to stick the accelerator.
Yeah.
But still, using the boot, I kind of like that.
Yeah, there were some interesting bits. It was not completely without merits. Overall, as a movie, did it work for me? No. Did I expect it to? No. Do I think they should have made it? No. And I don't know what they were really setting out to do with this film.
I guess part of what confused me in the category of where you're at right now of what didn't work was like when the tanker hit the, was it Ace Chemicals?
Ace Chemicals.
It looked like it hit a fireworks factory.
Yes. Some of that I chalked up to, I don't want to say Hollywood effects, but I'm willing to bet if we went through the Batman movies of the early era Batman stuff, not Adam West, but early 80s stuff, that they were doing more of the fireworks pyrotechnics than explosive pyrotechnics. Because, oh, it's comics.
Yeah.
And in the comics, I forget if it was Ace or Acme, but either way, it's, again, all the Joker stuff kind of happened there. And they allude to, well, they allude, they give a ton of exposition. That was the other thing. Harley spent half the movie explaining stuff to the audience.
Yes. Yes. And oh, you don't know who she is? That's my bad. Let me rewind how many years to give you this story?
Well, how many times did we rewind?
Yeah.
That got annoying because we did it at least 4 or 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to explain this character or that character and this thing or that thing. And it got to where we'd catch up to the current point and I'd lost track of, wait, where did we leave off?
Yep.
And do I care?
Well, there was one point when we caught up to a point from a different angle and I'm like, oh, wait, we didn't see how that ended. And I forgot that I was supposed to care how that ended. But I guess now I'm going to find out.
There's a part of me that thinks anytime you've got to take your story and shuffle when you tell things off the sequential timeline, you're hiding a bad story. It's not always the case, but I think 9 times out of 10, it is.
Yeah, they wanted to give different perspectives. They wanted to really hold back the reveal that one person survived a massacre.
Well, and they wanted to get to where it's like, okay, at this point, we've either hit a high note or whatever, and we're not sure what to do next. So, oh, well, let me rewind and tell you this backstory, because otherwise, you'd have all this backstory happening, and it'd be about a quarter till the end of the movie where the things actually start happening.
Yeah.
And I felt even about halfway through the movie, I'm still waiting for the story to really get going. And part of it is there's a jewel, somebody wants it, they're going after it. And in not a heist kind of a way, it's just a go find that person and kill them.
My problem was I was waiting for the birds of prey to meet each other.
And that did happen near the tail end of the movie. I don't consider those characters the birds of prey.
And once they got together, that's what I realized.
Moreover, I don't think the movie makers considered the 5 characters the birds of prey. They considered it only Renee Montoya, Black Canary, and Huntress.
Yes.
And that's a little weird in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping for more out of this than we got. Not really expecting to get that, but I was hoping. And I don't think they captured the part of Harley Quinn that works. They absolutely didn't capture the good elements of the Birds of Prey that kept that comic around for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were going for a little bit of shock value. Certainly the action, the gore, the profanity, or the violence, I should say, not so much the gore, although there was definitely some of that.
I can't think of the lines of dialogue, but there were at least 2. One that Harley Quinn had when she was going down the slide, and one when they were just on a very tight close-up of her.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good lines of dialogue, but they also felt like, and we know this is good for the trailer, we're making sure we get a good shot of it.
Yeah. There are a couple of times where I wonder if the writers write the trailer to get the quips they want for something they think would sell a movie, and then figure out where to go put them in the movie later.
They were well delivered. They were visually pretty good. And I say pretty good because that tight close-up was lots of, like, white smoke and everything.
Mm.
So it was just really tight on her face.
There were a couple of things, like in the precinct where she's going after some stuff. And we've got the beanbags and all of those things. Some of that had to be in the trailer.
The glitter cartridges cracked me up.
Yeah, that was actually one of the better action sequences.
I enjoyed the glitter cartridges. I feel so sorry and so grateful to the stuntman who was the first cop to take a beanbag.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful shot. He took that to the glasses frame. It broke just right. I loved it.
I half expected they had wires to pull the glasses apart at a certain point and things like that. It's the kind of thing that looked like it actually could have been a dangerous stunt if things had gone wrong.
Yep. It was beautiful.
Great done. It was a lot of fun. And I kind of liked the cutback to her where she takes off the scarf and the jacket and stuff. And it's, I don't say classic Harley Quinn, but it's the more modern Daddy's Little Monster version.
To me, that was she came in looking a bit like Audrey Hepburn.
Yep.
And then
she's undercover.
Yes. And then reveals, as you say, Daddy's Little Monster. That worked for me where I don't know if they were going for Audrey Hepburn or Marilyn Monroe in the song sequence. That didn't work for me.
Oh, I took that as a Madonna thing.
Oh, interesting.
And it felt like they tried it, couldn't make it work, so they edited it to death.
Mm-hmm.
In all the wrong ways. And it totally didn't work for me. I could see what I thought they were going for.
Yeah.
And that it felt to me like they thought they didn't have it either.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of things that were definitely a swing and a miss. And a couple of things that we'll do this because it ought to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt cliche funny versus actually funny for me.
Well, Renee Montoya gets kicked out a window. She climbs back up through it. And when we look out the window later, I'm like, where'd she land? How did she climb back up?
Where did she land? How did she survive that? Why does she not have any bruises and stuff? Why didn't she just come back up the stairs like a regular person?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a number of things like that that defy rationale. I did like when, we need weapons. Harley opens a thing, which turns out to be empty, but then somebody else happens to open another trunk that has all the weapons there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if there's one place to not go in Gotham City, it's a defunct amusement park. It's got to be the most dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, it felt like we were definitely in Gotham City, but there are other times it absolutely didn't.
I was thinking a lot of it felt more like Hell's Kitchen or just New York in general. When we were at the Chinese place.
Yeah, there's the whole generic Chinatown aspect and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, it was really, it's just a Chinese place on a corner.
Yeah.
Not even a Chinatown sort of thing. No mention of where Batman is during all of this or any of that sort of the Joker or any of that stuff. So it was claiming to be set in Gotham, had some of the trappings of it, but some of the obvious trappings were just not there.
I also felt that the Captain was underused, poorly used. There is a throwaway character.
The Captain was there as a plot device for the Renee Montoya character to explain why she got no respect and why she'd leave the force.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted there to be something going on with the Captain, whether he was taking bribes or he was actually well-meaning, just not as good at his job, but he knew is if he could keep her at a desk under him,
yep,
he'd keep yep. looking good.
Yep. There were something. A couple of ways there could have been payoff for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Williams did a great job with the character, but it was a nothing character.
Yeah, they gave him nothing to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a shame because I think you could do a really good series on the Gotham PD and Gotham Central in the comics. Greg Rucka did a lengthy run on that where it's just, here are the cops in Gotham City. Here's what they do. Here's what they deal with. Sometimes you have Bat characters in there. Most of the time you don't, but they're just kind of picking up the pieces and, okay, we know this guy did it because one of the Bat folks brought him in, but we don't have the evidence, we can't make the case, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was this thing I'd love to see turned into a good TV show, particularly if you could do it a way where you do get some of the various Batman family characters showing up from time to time.
Yeah.
And do a way where that part works. I mean, you would almost need to do it as part of like an Arrowverse series of shows, where you know those things are happening elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, this is what we get of Gotham, and it's through this lens, we hear about these things, maybe we see those characters a time or two here, but mainly in the other shows. Could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it could.
So, overall with this, I get why they made it, I think they took the wrong direction with it. It didn't work for me. I don't recommend this.
Mm-mm. I do hope that the actress who played the kid, Cassandra Cain, I hope she keeps acting and does more. I think she had some really good moments. Mm-hmm. The grocery store being key among them.
She did good with what she had. That's not Cassandra Cain by such a long shot in my mind.
Yeah, and I get that.
Yeah, but they made the characters they set out to make for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They just happened to use a recognizable name for no good reason.
Yeah.
I am curious about the Suicide Squad that is after this in the sequence of DC movies, which again, this is still the old regime prior to James Gunn and all that stuff going on now, which we've watched the Superman of, but we still haven't seen the Bat. But we've also still got Suicide Squad. We've got
one of the Aquaman movies, maybe?
The second Aquaman movie, definitely. I think that's the last of the bunch of them. We've also got Blue Beetle.
Oh, okay.
And I'm curious about that one as well. So we'll get to them all at some point. But for some of them, it does take a while to build up the, yeah, I guess we should go ahead and watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, why with a lot of people I talk to outside of comics, they're excited about Marvel films, and the general consensus is DC has not made a good film in decades.
Yeah, sadly.
And they're not wrong in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I just hate to see the DC characters, a la the comic books, kind of get hit with the rap from the movies, if that makes sense.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, because the movies certainly don't get people towards the comics, but sometimes what they do in the movies winds up supplanting what's in the comics, because, and this happens at Marvel too, sometimes the writers they're hiring are more familiar with the movies than the actual comics.
Yeah.
And I have a fundamental problem with that.
Yeah, I can see where you would.
And again, for this movie, they were not beholden to the comic universe stuff. They had a few things they had to stick with because of what had been established in this movie universe.
Mm-hmm.
But when you bring in characters like Cassandra Cain, do you really need to do wrong by the comic version? Give the character a different name.
Yeah.
There's got to be some pickpocket in Gotham you could have used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I also go, though, with if you're going to do a property from the comics, understand the comics, leverage the comics, you got to tweak a little to make it work as a movie, and I get that. They tweaked a little too much. But again, I go back to, well, there were some things that were just so counter to the comics. There was also a ton of evidence that these people actually read the comics, knew the comics, and tried to stick to parts of the comics.
Yeah.
I mean, so much was lifted lock, stock, and barrel. Unfortunately, a lot of that was in exposition and montages versus the story.
Yeah.
But it could have been worse.
That's true.
I fear if we watch, like, the Suicide Squad, we may figure out how it could be worse. But who knows? Anything else?
I think that does it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.